Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Conscious Love Show. Shane Kohler here. Pleasure to be back with you today. Today is Tuesday, April 16th, and I want to tell you about something really exciting that is happening tomorrow, Wednesday, April 17th. Tomorrow evening, I am going to be hosting a workshop called Attachment, where we are going to do a deep dive into attachment styles. Now, what are attachment styles, you ask? Well, your attachment style begins very early on in your life, and it has a lot to do with not only who you're attracted to, but also the long-term quality of relationships that you can create. Most of us have an insecure attachment style, and of course, we want to work towards creating a more secure one. So in tomorrow's workshop, you're going to be able to learn about all the different types of insecure attachment styles. You're going to be able to learn about what type you have. You're going to be able to learn about what that means in terms of the kind of people you're going to be attracted to, and also the quality of relationships you're going to experience. And you're also going to learn how to move from wherever you are right now to a fully secure attachment style where you can have the deep, conscious love that you truly want to have. So I'm really excited to deliver this workshop. It is around one of my favorite topics. It's going to be tomorrow evening, Wednesday, April 17th at 7 p.m. Eastern time. It's going to go for about 90 minutes. We will have a live Q&A discussion at the end. So we're going to have a lot of fun. It's going to be a very deep and insightful workshop. You also will have the opportunity to take a quiz and find out what your attachment style is at the end of the workshop. A lot of value to be had here. I do not want you to miss it. I'm going to leave the link to register in the description below wherever you're listening to this episode. So I truly hope you make the time to be there, and I promise to deliver and give you lots of amazing value when you show up. So thanks for tuning in today. Appreciate you joining the show, and we'll see you tomorrow night for the workshop. Lots of love. Hey everybody, welcome to the Conscious Love Show. Whether you are single, you are in a relationship, or you're healing a broken heart, this show is here to inspire you, to remind you how beautiful, lovable, and amazing you truly are, and to give you the practical tools and insights to navigate from wherever you are right now to the loving relationship that you so deeply want to have. My name is Shane Kohler. I'm a certified transformational coach and trainer with over a decade experience helping people release their trauma and open their hearts to love. I've delivered seminars all over the world, coached thousands of people through my online platforms and programs, and every week I'm coming straight to you with the hottest insights and the best teachers around, bringing you powerful resources and profound conversations to heal your relationship with love, dating, and yourself. I'm so grateful you're here, and if it's your first time, welcome. You can count on me to always show up for you with my very best and a commitment to learn and grow myself so I can serve you to my maximum ability. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. I've got some awesome things planned for you today. So without further ado, let's dive in. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Conscious Love Show. Shane Kohler here. Pleasure to be on with you today. And in today's episode, we are going to be diving into the incredible mystery of attraction. Really excited to jump into today's topic. And my intention is to be able to demystify this conversation for you a little bit, because it is quite a big mystery. I know when it comes to attraction, we feel all kinds of things for all kinds of people. Sometimes we don't feel things for the people we want to, and the people we want to feel things don't feel the things we want them to feel for us. And it can be a big, crazy ride. And so today I'm going to hope to break down a little bit about what's going on and give you some clarity so you can really understand what's happening in terms of attraction, why you're attracted to the people you are, why you're not attracted to the people you are not, and vice versa. I've been really deep diving into this idea of attraction. And, you know, with my clients and in the Inspired Love program, it has been coming up, this conversation of attraction. I mean, it's been everything from I'm so attracted, I can't even help myself and I don't know what to do with myself, to I'm like, I haven't been attracted to anyone in 10 years and I don't even know what to do with it. Like, I don't even know if I'll ever be attracted to anyone again, and everything in between. And this conversation of attraction is such an interesting thing, because I know for so many of us, it seems so mysterious. And a lot of us might question, like, even why are we attracted to the people we are attracted to? Where, you know, I look at my past and I look back over my life and I see that most of the people I've been attracted throughout my life actually weren't really good for me, right? Like a lot of the people that I've been attracted to in my life weren't really great people for me. And then I look at, you know, the people that maybe I would have thought were secure or healthy, and I don't feel like I'm attracted to them. Like a lot of us struggle with that. A lot of us say that the people that I'm attracted to are never attracted to me, and the people that you know, are attracted to me, I'm never attracted to them, right? And attraction, I know for so many of us, seems like this big, mysterious thing. And you know, I always say that there are 7 billion people in the world. You can definitely find one of them. And of course, that sounds really great when I say it, but then I know experientially as you're out there searching and you're like, well, yeah, there are 7 billion people in the world, but if I'm not attracted to any of them, or none of them are attracted to me, or the ones that I'm attracted to aren't attracted to me, and vice versa, the fact that there are 7 billion people in the world doesn't really help me because I'm still stuck. And so my intention in today's conversation and in today's episode is really to demystify this conversation around attraction and really shed some light on how attraction works, why it happens, when it happens, where it happens, and what to do with all of it, right? I think if we can really understand what attraction is, like when we're attracted to someone, if we can understand what is actually happening inside of us when we're attracted to someone, so when we start to feel these things and when we start to see this happening, we can go, oh, I recognize that. I know what that is, right? I mean, that definitely is going to help a lot. I think if we can understand kind of the cycle of attraction, that there's, it goes up and then it comes down, right? I think a lot of us are expecting to meet someone and be on this never-ending high for the rest of our lives. And like attraction, actually the way most of us feel it and think about it when we talk about attraction is not something that's sustainable, but it comes up and it comes down, right? And if we can understand more of what's happening when we're attracted to someone, we can understand the sensations in our body, the thoughts, the feelings. If we can understand all of it, we can really see what's happening. And while we might be feeling all of these things, we can move through them very consciously and very aware. We won't be overpowered by them the way we usually are, where, you know, we just turn into an obsessive crazy person every time we develop a strong attraction to someone, right? And then I think the other side of it too, if we can, for those of you who maybe aren't attracted as often as you would like to be, or you struggle to make that connection or feel that strong attraction to someone, you know, I know a lot of people feel like that too. And if that's you, I think it can be helpful to understand that that really strong, intense attraction that we think we want to have is actually not always the best thing or even healthy to have. And it's also not necessary to have that at that level of intensity to have a successful relationship. Like you can have a successful, long-term, deeply loving, deeply passionate relationship without ever feeling like obsessively attracted to your partner. And I think a lot of us feel that if that obsessive level of attraction isn't there, then I'm never going to be in love with my partner the way I would really want to be. And so in today's conversation, I want to really break down all of this because I mean, it's so mysterious. And I've been deep diving on it. I've been doing a lot of research and reading articles and just really finding out what the science says, and you know, running it past my own experience and looking at my experience with my clients, just to really try to understand for myself, like what is happening around attraction with us. And in today's episode, I'm going to break down a lot of what I've learned and really, I think, shed some light on this that's made a lot of sense for me. And I think it's going to make a lot of sense for you too. So that being said, I want to start with the three categories of attraction. And they are, I'll just name them. The first one is lust. The second one is what we'll call attraction. And the third one is attachment, right? So when we talk about attraction, like under the big umbrella, we're going to break it down under these three categories. First one being lust. Second one being actual, what we think about when we say attraction. And then the third one being attachment, which is more long-term. Now, each one of these categories is governed by a certain set of hormones. So each one of these categories, lust, attraction, and attachment, are all governed by a different set of hormones. And each one of these categories have a very different experience when you're experiencing them. And so often we think of it like it's all one thing, right? Like we should be strongly, securely attached to our partner. We should be deeply in love and attracted to them. And we should also be lusting after them. And we feel like if all three of these things aren't active with our partner all the time, something is wrong in the relationship. Well, so let me just start by clarifying that no, actually, these are three distinct categories that happen at three distinct times in three distinct situations, and they're not all meant to be active at the same time. I don't even know if that's possible. It definitely wouldn't be healthy. Like you would probably fire out your brain neurochemically if that were happening, right? So it's actually not supposed to be that way. And I know, like, I know for myself, like I remember when my wife and I started dating and, you know, we had a very active sex life in the beginning. And then as we got more into our relationship, it's not that we stopped having sex, but it's that things changed, right? It wasn't every day. It was maybe once a week or a couple times a week, or sometimes we'd go a week without it, or, you know, things changed, right? And I remember, like, for myself, just freaking out when that change happened, right? Like, oh, we don't constantly want each other all the time. Does that mean our relationship is dying? No, it actually didn't mean our relationship was dying. It meant it was growing. It meant it was evolving. But I had never been in a relationship at that time that had gotten that far, right? So for me, when I experienced the relationship evolving into a place that made me uncomfortable, that scared me. I was like, whoa, like is our love dying? We're not lusting after each other every moment of every day, right? So I had to learn that, no, that's a phase, and, you know, and that's still there at times. It's not like it's never there, but it doesn't dominate every second of every day in our relationship, nor should it. So lust is what we'll call sexual drive, right? Lust is the part of us that just literally wants to have sex with someone else. It's not about, you know, being in love with them. It's not about having a long-term relationship with them. It's not even really about how you feel about them. It's not even really about them. I mean, it might be about the way their body looks or certain things about them that turn you on. But what it's really about is it's about your physical need for sex. And this is something, I mean, obviously we all have, and it's stronger in some people, not as strong in others, right? It's not that everybody has the exact same sex drive, but it's governed by the hormones testosterone and estrogen. And when these hormones, especially testosterone, and they're commonly associated, testosterone for men, estrogen for women, but we all have both of them. Testosterone in particular is a major sex drive for both men and women when it's in high levels, and estrogen can also work that way too. What I found very interesting about the lust stage when these hormones, testosterone and estrogen, are being flooded into the system in very high levels is that it actually shuts down the prefrontal cortex, which regulates rational behavior. So when your system is ready to reproduce and you start getting flooded with these sex hormones, something that happens simultaneously is rational behavior also like takes a hit, right? Like you're not so rational anymore. So this part of it is something that it's just, again, it's built into who we are as humans. It is something that perpetuates the survival of our species. We need to reproduce. We need to keep having more humans if we want our species to survive, right? This is very animal. This is very basic. This is just something that it's our primal sex drive. And that is one stage of attraction. Now, the second stage of attraction, which I'm defining as attraction itself, right? So this is the stage where we think about desiring someone, wanting to be with them, thinking about them all the time, obsessing about them, wondering if they want us the same way, where the relationship's going to go, all of this kind of stuff, right? So lust is strictly about the sexual drive. Attraction is more about the reward game that's being played. So there's the element of us that just physically wants to sexually connect with another human being. And then there's the element of us that wants romance. We want to be courted. We want the push and the pull and the will it happen or the won't it happen. And the excitement of when we get that text we were waiting for and the pain of not getting the text we were waiting for, right? And it's this whole reward-centered game that we call attraction or being attracted to or falling in love or desiring or wanting someone. Right? And this is all about the reward hormones. Now, one of the primary, and I mean, the hormone we always talk about when it comes to reward is dopamine. And dopamine is definitely the primary hormone that's active here, right? So dopamine is the hormone in our brain that rewards us for doing something that feels good. Dopamine is kind of a double-edged sword because it can reward us for doing positive things, but it quite often rewards us for doing negative things. Right. So, for example, if you're obsessively attached to somebody to an unhealthy way, and maybe they're not being consistent for you, and maybe they're not loving you and showing up for you and being connected and committed and all that stuff, but you keep chasing them because even though 9 times out of 10, they don't respond the way you would want them to, that 1 time in 10 that they do, that 1 time that they do respond, that 1 time that they are connected, you get a hit of dopamine. Right? You go, oh, they like me. Oh, it feels good. Right? And so we can end up chasing that reward, right? We can end up chasing that, oh, I'm suffering, but boom, there's the reward. Now I feel good. And we can often end up chasing that. And a lot of times when we're attracted to someone, or when we say we're attracted to someone, or when we say we're falling in love with someone, or when we're really desiring someone, this is what's happening. We're on a cycle of chasing that next hit of dopamine. Now, another hormone that's very active here in the attraction phase, I always have a hard time saying this one, norepinephrine. So this is the fight or flight chemical, right? It's the part of us that makes us alert, on guard. We don't really feel safe. Like, we got to watch our back. Like, is everything okay? Right? So in the attraction phase of getting to know someone, you have the combination of dopamine, where you're being rewarded for things that feel good, right? So chasing and getting that hit, that reward every time they text me back or call me or want me or show an interest. And then combined with that is the norepinephrine, the fight or flight chemical. So you're on guard, alert, have anxiety. Is this going to work out? Is this going to be okay? Are they going to lose interest, right? So it's this weird combination of reward mixed with anxiety that makes you feel stressed, but in an excited way, and makes you like hopeful and giddy and butterflies and all these kind of like slightly euphoric feelings, but they're not peaceful. They're mixed with an element of anxiety. And then to top it all off, and this is what I thought was like the just really drove the point home for me, was in this attraction category, something else that happens is you experience a reduction in serotonin. Now, what is serotonin? Serotonin is the happiness neurotransmitter, right? Serotonin is the thing that makes us feel regulated. It puts our body at ease. It makes us feel comfortable. It makes us feel at peace. It makes us feel happy, right? Serotonin is like that neurochemical that is released. If you think about like a runner's high, that's based on serotonin. So for those of you who run or do a lot of physical exercise, like that really good feeling you get when you've just like worked out really hard and your body just feels relaxed and you're getting those endorphins, like that's what serotonin feels like. So serotonin makes you feel at ease, regulated, deeply at peace, comfortable in your own body. And when we're in this attraction category, there's actually a decrease in serotonin. So there's an increase in dopamine, our motivation, our reward drive. There's an increase in norepinephrine, this chemical that puts us on guard in fight or flight. And there's a decrease in the chemical that regulates our system. This is why when you're attracted to someone, you often feel like an incredible amount of anxiety, right? This is why when you're attracted to someone, it feels stressful. This is also why it's not healthy to be attracted to someone in this way for extended periods of time. I mean, you wouldn't want to feel this way about someone for years and years and years on end. Like I said, you would fry your brain. So it's just important to recognize that this is a certain experience that happens, but it's not meant to be sustained. You wouldn't want it to be sustained. It wouldn't even feel good if it were sustained. The only reason it feels good when you're having it is because it's like exciting, right? It's like a rush. It's like similar to when you ride a roller coaster, right? The roller coaster feels good because it's exciting, but you wouldn't want to be on a roller coaster, you know, for every day of your life, for the rest of your life, right? So it's the same kind of thing. One other thing I want to say about this, the attraction category here that we're talking about is that people who suffer from obsessive compulsive disorder also have low serotonin. So I thought it was really interesting that what actually happens in our brains when we're highly attracted to someone is our brains start to look like the brain of someone who has obsessive compulsive disorder. So it's just, I say that just to put in perspective what's actually happening when you're in that experience. Now, the third category is what we're calling attachment. And the third category is about bonding, family, and friendships, right? So in this category, it's governed by the primarily the neurochemical oxytocin, which is the cuddle hormone that's released during sex, breastfeeding, and childbirth. Now, I know those may seem like three vastly different things, right? Sex, breastfeeding, and childbirth. Well, the thing that all of those three have in common is that they're all linked to bonding, right? So this is the neurochemical that actually develops, that has you want to bond closely with someone. This is the thing that has you want to keep someone in your life long-term, that has you want to build a family with them, right? When you experience a lot of oxytocin around someone, it creates that family, that bonding, that like, this is my person, this is my family, right? This is my pack kind of thing. This third category is less about the rush of desiring someone, of the will it happen or won't it happen, of the do they like me, of the how do I get them to like me. You know, it's not that reward-centered game type experience. But what it actually is it's about having someone become your family. It's about deeply bonding with someone. I'm not necessarily going to say for life, but it could be for life, right? It's about deeply bonding with someone on that level where it moves beyond being attracted to them. It moves beyond dating them. They become an integral part of your life. The way that you feel about someone in this attachment category is not the intense romance, like, oh my God, I'm so in love with you. But you feel more like best friends. There is a deep love there, right? It's not that there's not love there. It's not that you don't care deeply for the person. It's not that you don't want them around you every day. It's not that you don't want to get close and snuggle with them. I mean, you know, oxytocin is the cuddle hormone, right? So it's not that those things aren't there. They're there. But the feeling is not this obsessive level of, oh my God, I need to be around you all the time. It's more of a comfortable, secure, again, like, I mean, those of you who have had a best friend in your life, it's the way you feel with your best friend, right? You're not trying to impress them. You're not worried that they're going to leave you. You're not, you know, trying to do things to get their approval. Like, you feel comfortable. It's okay to be yourself. You feel secure in the relationship. You feel like they're never going to leave you. Like, you feel safe, right? Like, that's what a best friendship is like. And this is the only one of these three categories that's really sustainable long-term. Right? Like, of these three categories, this is the only one that is really something that can be present, like, day in and day out throughout your life. And again, like, you wouldn't want to be lusting after your partner every moment of every day. You wouldn't want to be obsessively level attracted to your partner where you can't even think or focus or eat or sleep, you know, every moment of every day. Like, you wouldn't want that. And so this attachment category is really about where things go long-term. And what I find so interesting here is that whether you experience a strong amount of lust in the beginning, right, that strong sex drive for that person, whether you experience that strong, you know, obsessive compulsive level of attraction for that person, whether or not you experience those two things in high levels, I mean, like, I'll just say, if you don't experience those things at all for the person, then you probably have zero compatibility with them and it's never going to happen. But if you experience those things to some degree, sometimes with the person, and maybe they're not at very, very high levels, but they're still there, you can still have the secure experience of attachment with someone, which is the only thing that really translates long-term anyway. What's so interesting about this is that deep, like intense, heightened anxiety level of attraction that we're seeking with somebody really isn't necessary to have the kind of relationship we all want to have at the end of the day. Most of us feel that that level of attraction is a necessary precursor to get to the long-term secure attachment that we want to have. It's actually not. It's actually not. See, another way it could look, and like, I know couples that have evolved this way. Like, I'm not just making this up. Like, this has happened for real people and does happen for real people. But like, just another way this happens is sometimes there will be two best friends that are close for years and they know each other inside and out and they talk and they feel very safe and they feel very comfortable with each other and they've never been highly attracted to each other. But one day, for whatever reason, they just decide to explore the relationship romantically and it just feels very natural and very safe and very comfortable. And they never obsess about each other. They never have the anxiety of will it happen or won't it happen. Like, they never go through all of that. But they still end up being sexually attracted to each other. They have a deep love and respect and appreciation for each other. They have that deep bonding with each other. And they've, to some degree, while the attraction stuff I'm sure was still there to some degree in some way, they bypassed that entire series of hyper intense attraction by just developing a deep friendship and falling in love through that, rather than falling in love through an obsessive level attraction. And it's a different way of moving into a relationship, right? I'm not, it doesn't feel the same way, but the love isn't any less real. The secure relationship that's created isn't any less real. Another thing I've found, and I found this just with working with many, many clients, is that people who are very secure within themselves, if they've done a lot of work or they naturally have a very secure attachment style, they often just won't feel that obsessive level attraction anyway. It just won't happen for them at all. And the reason is because their system is so regulated and they have habitually gotten used to keeping their system so regulated that they just won't allow their system to become that dysregulated. So when they like someone, you know, they may feel the similar dopamine and norepinephrine experiences. I'm not saying that's not happening at all. That's there to an extent. But they keep it at bay. They keep it at a very manageable place because they have gotten used to living in a very regulated state, and they just don't allow their system to become that dysregulated, maybe slightly this way or slightly that way, but then they bring it back. And so this intense level of attraction is not necessary for a long-term, deeply loving and passionate, committed relationship. it's not even possible for everyone, right? Like some people will just not experience that. I think what we all need to kind of do is start reframing what we're looking for in a relationship. Now, I want to come back to that, but there are some other things I want to touch on here. And I want to circle back and really talk about our attachment styles and how our attachment styles are interwoven into all of this. But before I go there, I want to touch on some factors of physical attraction, because I really wanted to know, as I was doing my research, I really wanted to know, like, what is the reality around physical attraction? Right? Like, what is the truth about it? Like, are there things that people are just objectively attracted to? Right? Like, what are the things that just make people become attracted? Like, I really wanted to dive into this. And truth is, I actually found some really cool stuff. And so I wanna share this, because I think really understanding what physical attraction is and all the different places it comes from can really help you understand your own attraction, why you're attracted to the people you're attracted to, and also can help you understand what aspects of that are very highly important and which aspects of it are not. And so I found an article. I'll link the article below in the description so you can read it. But I'm just going to go through some of the highlights that I found in this article. And this article was based on, I think, 5 different studies that have been done strictly around physical attraction. So the way these studies have been done, if you imagine like going to some kind of clinic or something, and they hook you up to like monitors that test your brain waves and things like that, and test your blood pressure and your responses and all that kind of stuff, right? And then they sit you down and they show you like pictures of different people. And you might see like thousands of different pictures. And they're monitoring with each picture what's happening inside your body, right? And they do this with thousands and thousands of different people. And then they start to see patterns. And so they can say, okay, most people are attracted to X, or most people are attracted to Y, or they could say these characteristics are universally attractive. Everybody found this attractive. Everybody found this unattractive, right? And so they've done studies. Now, what's really cool about these studies is that what's not included in these studies is like the person's energy or their sense of humor or the way you feel when you're with them, right? Because the person's not even there. You're literally just looking at pictures. So these studies are based 100% on physical appearance. Now, I'm going to be the first to say that physical appearance is not the only factor, right? It's probably actually a small percentage of the factors. But I think it's very cool to understand, how does physical appearance, like, how does it play? What influence does it have? And then as well, take the other factors into account. But what I love about these studies was they only looked at physical appearance. And so what I'm about to share with you are things that have really universally been found to be attractive by almost everybody that are strictly based on physical appearance. Number one is facial symmetry. So people who have a more symmetrical face tend to be universally more attractive. Now, you know, one of my nostrils is way bigger than the other one, so, you know, I might be screwed on that note. But people who have symmetrical faces tend to universally be more attractive. The appearance of health is supposed to be a universally attractive quality. And they gave 3 criteria for the appearance of health. I think maybe something that would go hand in hand with this would just be generally, you know, being in shape and looking like you take care of yourself. But they gave 3 specific things. They said homogeneity of color, meaning the color of your skin is consistent throughout. Smooth skin texture, and redness of cheeks and lips. So these are 3 criteria that these studies showed that were found universally attractive. Another thing was indicators of personality. Now, this is really interesting when it's done with physical attraction, because you're not engaging with the person. But the way a person looks can give you clues about what their personality might be like. And what the studies found was that when the way somebody looked demonstrated that they shared values with that person. That person was attracted to them. Now, I think this can go in different directions, right? This can be very healthy. This can be very unhealthy. Because I think narcissism is highly valued in our culture right now. I was listening to the song Starboy this weekend, which my wife and I were on a road trip and it came on the radio. And anyway, I was listening to it and it's a catchy tune. I don't really like The Weeknd that much, but it's a catchy tune. And then I was listening to it. And then the next day it was stuck in my head and I went back and I read the lyrics of it because I was just curious, catchy song and stuck in my head. What is the song about? And the lyrics, and this is literally one of the most popular songs in the world right now. And the lyrics don't have a single meaningful word in them. He's like, my main girl's out of your league. My side girl's out of your league. I got a table made out of ebony. Like, I need a centerpiece for my house. Like literally not one meaningful word in the whole song. Like, the song is like an anthem to narcissism. And I'm not making a value judgment about it. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but I'm looking at the values in our culture. And I'm saying, like, this song is one of the most popular songs in the world right now. Look at the values that are being espoused in that song right now. Again, I'm not saying it's good, bad, right, or wrong, but I'm saying when, in terms of attraction, the societal values that we've picked up could largely have you be attracted to narcissistic people. Right? Like, if you're into popular culture and you're picking up the societal values, there is a high likelihood that you will be attracted to narcissistic people, at least based on societal values. Now, you could also be attracted to people who look kind, people who look warm, people who look empathetic or understanding, right? Those could also be values. It's really a reflection of your own value system. Right. But again, if you're in the popular culture, if you're into popular movies and music and all this stuff, you probably value a lot of narcissistic qualities. Just something to check in with. Another thing on this list was smiling was always determined to be more attractive than not. Now, I thought that was so cool because that's something we can all do. And 100% of the time, every single person found smiling more attractive than not smiling. Now, a question you might want to ask yourself is, how often do you smile, right? When you're out in the world, when you pass someone on the street, do you smile at them, right? Like, just smiling is something we can all do that instantly makes us more attractive. And if we just got in the habit of smiling at people, of bringing this warm, inviting essence everywhere we go, we might make way more connections without even trying. So I just found that one to be fascinating. Another one, this is pretty universal, taller men and shorter women. Now, this one's also highly relative, but I think it is a real factor. Like, I think, and it might not be true for every single person, but I think women generally want a man who's taller than her, and men generally want a woman who's shorter than them. Now, again, this is highly relative because if you're a 6'5" man, you could date a 6-foot tall woman. She still might be taller than a lot of men out there, but she's shorter than you. Right? Vice versa. It could work all the different ways. I'll just say from my own experience, this isn't a deal breaker for people who are conscious because my wife and I are the same height. Actually, my wife is like a half inch taller than me or something. So it's a factor in terms of attractiveness. And something my wife shared with me was when we met, like she liked me, she was attracted to me, she liked our relationships. One of the things she struggled with was my height. And, you know, she had to come to terms with it. And I respect that. Like, that was her process. But it's a reality, right? And it's a reality in the world. It was a reality for us. But I want to also say that we're conscious people. We saw enough value in this relationship to not let that be an obstacle. So while it was a factor, it was not a deal breaker. Men tend to like more soft feminine features. This is really interesting. Men were tend to like more soft feminine features. So more in terms of the face, more round features instead of more like hard lines on the face, like, you know, hard cheekbones or jaw lines or forehead, more soft features. And women, this is what I found really interesting. Women tended to like more masculine features during the time of ovulation in their cycle. But during other parts of their cycle, they tended to be attracted to more feminine features. I found this really interesting in particular because I've had a lot of clients who have been in like really secure relationships with like really good men. And, you know, this is always the common complaint. Like, he's a great guy. He's so consistent and stable and loving and supportive, but he just doesn't excite me. He just doesn't, you know, he doesn't turn me on. There's not like that hot, intense attraction, right? And I found it really interesting in this regard that, but what I was going to say is, but these same women will say at times, I am highly, highly attracted to him, right? At times I'm highly, highly attracted to him. And at other times I'm not. And so it's kind of like, why am I attracted to him sometimes and not other times? Well, it's really interesting, right? Like during the ovulation period of her cycle, she might be more attracted to like that strong, dominant, masculine man. But during other periods of her cycle, she might be more attracted to a guy who's a little more feminine, who's a little more compassionate, empathetic, a better partner, a better parent, right? So it's just interesting how, and this is all based on hormones too, right? So if we go back to the conversation earlier, we could say that maybe during, you know, the ovulation phase of her cycle, more of the estrogen is active, but during the other phases of her cycle, maybe more of the oxytocin is active, right? So this is all hormonal. But something that I think is really, really great in that is it just is another reason to not give so much importance to that intense level of attraction, because it's changing all the time anyway, right? So I found that really interesting about the features. Now, when someone perceives that someone is either in a relationship or they have a lot of interest, we tend to be more attracted to that person. And in the studies, what they did, they would label certain people as married or partnered or unmarried, right? So when you're in the study and you're looking at, you know, these pictures coming across your face and you're looking at all the different ones, some of them say the person's married, some of them say the person's unmarried. And they noticed that as a whole, people tended to be more attractive to people who were married or partnered than people who weren't. Now, something I thought about when I read that was that I recently saw a video, and the woman in the video was talking about how a lot of women go for men that they perceive have a lot of options, and how like a good, secure, faithful man is not necessarily going to seem like he has a lot of options because he's interested in you, right? So it's not that he doesn't have options, but it's that he likes you, he's into you, he wants you to like him, he wants to show you that he's committed, he doesn't want you to think he's fucking around. So he's not entertaining all of his options, he's focused on you. And what the woman in this video was saying, and I'm not saying this is true for everyone across the board, but it's just an interesting consideration, is that we often see someone who looks like they have a lot of interest and become attracted to that person without realizing the reason they look like they have a lot of interest is because they're entertaining all of their interest. Whereas the person who might be committed and dedicated might have just as much interest, but they're not entertaining their interest because they're focused on you. They therefore look less attractive to you, where the person who is entertaining all of their interest and wouldn't be committed then looks more attractive. So I just found that to be a very interesting consideration. People also find someone alluring if they consider their ex-partner to be attractive. That's something that came up in these studies. I'm not exactly sure how they found that, but it's something that was reported in these studies. Most people have been shown to be attracted to people who look like their parents did when they were born. I found that to be a very interesting one. So most people have been shown to be attracted to people who look like their parents did at the time they were born. Now, all that being said, I think it's, if we just look at the factors of physical attraction and what really goes into all of this, right? And everything from facial symmetry to the appearance of health to smiling more often to perceiving that the person has lots of interest to perceiving that they share your values to them being married or not, like they're to them looking the way your parents did when you were born, right? Like there are so many factors, and some of it is influenced by our individual upbringing, our cultural upbringing, our parenting, our personal experiences. Some of it is universal for everybody, but there's so much happening here and there's so much nuance. And then if we even add to it is that human beings are always evolving, right? Like we're always evolving. So what you found attractive when you were 13, maybe or maybe wasn't the same thing you found attractive when you were 18. Maybe wasn't the same thing you found attractive at 25. Maybe wasn't the same thing you found attractive at 30. Right? Like it's always changing. It's always evolving. So even if you meet someone and you think, oh my God, they're the cat's meows right now, that doesn't mean you're going to feel that way about them 10 years from now. And so I think when it comes to physical attraction, what we want to do is recognize that a lot of us have been chasing a certain experience very much the same way an addict chases a drug. We've been living under the illusion that we're seeking love or we're seeking a relationship. But if you look at your behavior, you could probably poke holes in that theory. Because there have probably been opportunities when you had a shot at a really secure relationship and you walked away from it. And there have been opportunities where you have chased down people time and time again that have never offered you the opportunity for a secure relationship. So even though you live under the illusion that you're seeking love, if you really look at the choices you make and the behaviors and the actions you take, and you're honest, and no judgment, like no judgment here, but just a self-reflection, maybe you could say to yourself, maybe I'm not looking for love. Maybe there's something else going on. And again, not a judgment, not to beat yourself up, but just like a curiosity. Like maybe there's something else going on. And if you explored this, you might realize that you've been chasing a certain experience, as I said earlier, the same way that an addict chases a drug. And you've only been interested in people who activate that experience in you, and only for as long as they activate it. When someone doesn't activate that experience, you say, I'm not attracted to them. When they did activate that experience and then it dies out, you say, I fell out of love with them. I'm no longer in love with that person. But that actually has nothing to do with love at all. That is a hormonal reaction that's taking place in your body. And you are seeking out people, circumstances, and situations that will activate that experience in you. And you're chasing that. And why would someone do that? Right? Why would someone do that? And I want to say, like, when I say an addict, you're chasing it the way an addict chases a drug, I want to say that the research, the neurochemical research, suggests the same thing. So that's not just something I'm making up. The neurochemical research actually suggests that what's happening in your brain is the same thing that happens in an addict's brain when they use a drug. And so in order to understand why we might do this, let's look at why an addict uses a drug. And I'm someone with a history of drug addiction, so I can actually speak about this both from clinical expertise, as I've been somebody who worked in therapy and addiction, and I can also speak about this from personal experience. And I've also been a love addict, so there you go. The reason an addict chases an addiction, very simply put, is to run away from an emptiness they feel inside. The recent science on nervous system regulation might put it a little differently. So the way I just said it is the way I've always heard it described spiritually. The recent science on nervous system regulation would say that the nervous system has been wired into a dysregulated state. And so this person has a chronic feeling of uneasiness and discomfort in their body that the drug or the substance they're using helps to soothe. And so maybe their whole life they've lived with this chronic anxiety or stress wiring in their nervous system. And then at a certain age, maybe 13 or 15 or 20 years old, they try a drug. And for the first time in their life, they feel, oh my God, I don't feel the way I've always felt. And it feels amazing. And so they start chasing that substance because it's the only thing that has ever made them feel okay in their whole life. Well, a lot of us have done the exact same thing with love, right? We've had a dysregulated state for whatever reason, for our upbringing, for, you know, different reasons. And then we fall in love with someone or we get attracted to someone. And for the first time in our life, we feel a way that we've never felt before. And we think, oh my God, love is the answer. The same way the addict thinks, oh my God, the drug is the answer. We don't realize that what we're feeling isn't actually love. It's a hormonal reaction in our body. We just think it's the answer. And so we start chasing it the same way the addict starts chasing that substance. And if we never wake up and become aware that the thing we're chasing is not actually love, if we live under the illusion that that is love, then we'll do exactly what I said earlier. We'll never become attracted to anyone we don't feel that with. We'll walk away from anyone as soon as we stop feeling that with them. And we will never have a secure, loving relationship. It's just that simple. I think the last thing I want to touch on here, and I said earlier, I want to really bring this back to our attachment styles. Because I think our attachment styles are really the best way that I've seen this conversation broken down in terms of why we're attracted to the people we're attracted to, and in terms of how to develop a healthier attraction. So with everything I've been saying, you know, I want to start by just talking about the physical factors, because a lot of us think that we have to be very strongly physically attracted to someone. And when I say physically, I'm not even necessarily talking about how you feel. I'm talking about the way they look. We think we have to really, really like the way they look. We don't realize that when you love someone, when you care deeply about someone, when you share a deeply attachment to someone, you will adapt to the way they look. My wife went through cancer treatment. She lost her hair. I mean, like, I adapted to the way she looked because I loved her and I was committed to our relationship and I was deeply attached. So I adapted to the way she looked. The thing about, like I said, about the height, you know, yes, my wife was concerned about my height when we first met because she's a half inch taller than me, right? So she was like, well, you know, I always thought that when I met someone, I would be able to wear my heels and they would still be taller than me. And I'm like, well, sorry, that's not me. And she was able to adapt to the way I look because she loved me and she saw enough value in our relationship, right? So she was able to adapt to the way I look. So those physical, like the literal physical factors, are not as important as we think they are, right? When you get to know someone and you respect them and you appreciate them and you care about them, you can overlook physical factors. And actually, like, let me say this, at some point, you will have to overlook physical factors because even if your person is a perfect dime when you meet them, they're gonna age, their skin's gonna get wrinkly, they're gonna gain weight, they're maybe gonna have illness, right? Like, things are gonna happen. They're going to go through changes in the way they dress and the way they present themselves. Like, you're going to have to change it over time. So that's the first thing, is when you love and care and are attached to someone, you can adapt to how they look. But now I think the conversation around attachment styles is a little bit deeper, because now we're talking about how we feel. And you might say, okay, Shane, I can get on board with adapting to how someone looks, but if I don't feel anything for them, how am I supposed to be attracted to them? And I get that. And so this is where I think the attachment style conversation is so pertinent because, and I'm not going to do a whole discussion on attachment styles right now because I'm actually going to do a workshop on attachment styles so you can come to that. But I don't want to break them all down and discuss them all right now, but I just want to generally talk about how they're related to attraction. And then in the workshop, we can go into it in detail and I can really talk about all the nuances of it. But if you have an insecure attachment style, which means you would be leaning on the anxious side of the spectrum, the avoidant side of the spectrum, or you would be disorganized, which means you're kind of vacillating from one side of the spectrum to the other. And these are grossly simplistic terms right now. If you have any one of those styles, which are all insecure attachment styles, you are going to be addicted the way I've been talking about. It comes with the territory of insecurity, right? The anxious person or the avoidant person is addicted to the game. They love the romance. They love the will it happen or won't it happen. They love the power plays. They love all the feelings and the control and the not control, all of it. They love all of it. It perfectly plays into their attachment style, right? Like based on those insecure attachment styles, that is what you want. Now I know like especially avoidant people are a little more clear about it. Avoidant people are like, I'm not so sure I want a relationship. But anxious people actually think they do, right? Anxious people think they want a relationship. And you've got to understand, because you might ask yourself, How could I think I want a relationship but not actually want one and actually just want to stay in the cycle of addiction? Well, you've got to understand, thinking you want a relationship is part of the cycle. It's part of the game. You can't feel the way you want to feel or have the experiences you want to have without also thinking that you want a relationship. If you didn't think you want a relationship, that experience wouldn't be that experience. But you're seeking that experience itself rather than a long-term, consistent, stable commitment. And as long as you're operating with an insecure style, you are always going to be more attracted to the game than the long-term love. Now, underneath this, we all want love. Right. So you can think of the game as kind of being something that's happening up here, like in our mind as a distraction. But underneath it, we really do want to be loved. Like we really do. And that doesn't matter if you're anxious or avoidant. We really do want that. But as long as we're operating in the insecure styles, we're going to step towards it and then away from it. Towards it and then away from it. And what's really funny is anxious people, when they meet a secure partner, suddenly become avoidant. And some of you, if you've noticed having an anxious attachment style through your life, you might have noticed this in yourself, where you've been anxious your whole life, desperately chasing people. All of a sudden, you meet a secure person and you suddenly become avoidant. And that should be your clue right there, that you wanted the game more than you wanted a secure relationship. Right? Because you're like, whoa, 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 you're telling me the game's ending? Hold on, I'm not ready for the game to end. Can we start playing again? Right? Like, that's what happens. And so, two things I want to touch on. I want to touch on why we develop an insecure attachment style and how we create a secure one, because those are really the two questions we need to answer to create the kind of secure love we want to have. So number one, how do we develop an insecure attachment style? It generally has to do with love not being safe when we're young. And I think this can happen a lot of ways. I think it can happen by your parents loving you a lot, but being inconsistent with you. It can happen by you not getting a lot of warmth or attention or affection at all. It can happen by having a very traumatic or unstable or inconsistent environment. It can also happen even if you had a very loving family. It can happen if you had older siblings that were abusive, or if you were bullied at school. Or if even your first few relational experiences as a teenager or as an adult were highly dramatic or highly toxic. Or like I know for me, I always kind of had an anxious attachment style because my mom was really inconsistent for me. But then when I moved in with my dad, and I lived with my dad for about 4 years, and it was a deeply like traumatic environment, and I developed like a full-blown disorganized style. And this was from the age of 13 to the age of 17, where I just like my attachment style was just completely disorganized. It was all over the place because I went through a lot of trauma with my dad, and I went through a devastating breakup, and I became addicted to drugs, and all these things together just completely like just warped my attachment style. So I think it can happen a lot of different ways, but it doesn't really matter how it happens. And this is what I teach. This is what I'm going to go over in the attachment workshop. This is what I teach in the Inspired Love program. This is what I work with all my clients on. Is it doesn't matter whether you have an anxious or avoidant or disorganized style. The only thing you need to do is start to really pay attention to your internal experiences. And we could really say with everything you do and everywhere you go, but specifically around love and relationship, specifically around dating, attraction, all of that. You start to notice the things that dysregulate you. You start to try to catch them earlier and earlier and earlier. So before you become, you know, incredibly dysregulated, you catch it when you're just subtly dysregulated. So you practice paying attention, noticing the things that dysregulate you, noting the difference between what subtly dysregulates you and intensely dysregulates you. Practice catching it earlier and earlier and earlier and earlier. And then as you learn to do this, you start to learn to bring your system into regulation. Now, this happens in baby steps, right? This cannot be done overnight. This happens in baby steps. It happens by you working with every single real, alive experience that you have one at a time. But as you learn to recognize your own dysregulation and bring yourself back into balance, and as you practice that, and as you do it consistently and more consistently, you will become more secure. And I've said this before, and I actually did a whole episode on attachment style, so you can feel free to listen to that. But as you become more secure, it's not that you know, go from anxious to secure or avoidant to secure, but it's like you move along a spectrum, right? So it's like maybe you were 20% secure, 80% anxious. And then through time and practice, you become 30-70. Then through time and practice, you become 40-60. Through time and practice and so on. And even today, I mean, I've done a lot of work on myself. I still do a lot of work on myself. There are times when my anxious attachment style still shows up. There are times when I even have avoidant tendencies, right? So it's not about being completely secure, but it's about being able to regulate your experiences enough that when your anxiety or your avoidance or your disorganization wants to pull you out of secure love, you can recognize what's happening and you can bring yourself back. Right? When you're dating that person and you're like, you know, like they're a really great person, and on some level, I'm very attracted to them and I respect them and I think they're awesome and I really enjoy spending time with them, but I don't feel that heat that I'm looking for. You can notice what's happening and you could say, well, you know what? Maybe I could just lean into everything I love about them and just relax into that and get really comfortable being around this person and see if that heat can show up in a different way. Maybe it's not the same heat that I felt when I saw a person from across the room and I'm like, oh, I need them. But maybe I can feel that heat here in a different way. And this is what you might not realize that might really blow your mind when you experience it, is even though it was slower and less intense on the front end and in the build, how you end up feeling about the person long term might be more fulfilling than anything you ever even imagined. And so I want to say a couple of things here in closing. And number one, I want to invite you to the Attachment Styles Workshop. It's happening on April 17th. I'm going to leave the link to register in the description below the podcast. The workshop is absolutely free. It doesn't cost anything to attend, but I would definitely want you to be there because especially if you resonated with today's conversation, what I'm really going to break down in the attachment styles conversation is how you heal this, right? And how you become deeply attracted and in love with someone that who is very secure and consistent and committed, which I know is what we all want in our core, right? So in the attachment styles workshop, we're going to look at exactly that. How do you become deeply attracted and in love to somebody who has a very secure attachment? You have a very secure relationship. So I definitely want you to attend the workshop. The other thing I want to say, if you can recognize that what most of us call attraction and what most of us have been seeking in terms of love throughout our lives is simply a neurochemical hormonal reaction in our bodies. And I'm not diminishing the importance of that, but I think what makes it most important is to note that as good as it is, it doesn't last. If you can recognize that it is a bodily reaction that comes and goes and is temporary and is not the essence of what a long-term relationship is based on, I think what is naturally going to happen for you is you're going to start to recognize that experience as an uncomfortable one, as a dysregulating one, as one that actually takes your peace away rather than enhances it. And when you feel that happening, it's not that you might not enjoy it at times or get excited. I mean, it does feel good at times. Riding a roller coaster feels good. I love roller coasters, right? So like, it's not that it's bad or it doesn't feel good. But you might be able to ride that experience the way you might ride a roller coaster without wanting to feel it all the time or without needing to feel it all the time. And you might also start to feel inside of you a sense of like, you know, it's nice to feel this way, but I really just want to get back into balance, right? I really just want to get back into feeling at ease and secure inside myself. And I would like to know how I feel about this relationship once I'm not this intensely attracted to them, right? Like, I would like to know if I still like them as a person as much as I do now when I'm not having this hormonal reaction to them. And so I think what love and relationship is can start to take on a deeper meaning. And your vision of what you want to experience from love can get bigger and deeper and honestly more realistic. And all of this is going to lead you to having more healthy, loving, secure relationships. So thank you for being with me today. Lots of love to all of you. I appreciate you being here. And I'll see you back here next Tuesday on the next episode of the Conscious Love Show. Lots of love and many blessings. Take care, everybody. Have a fabulous week. Bye-bye. Thanks again for checking out the show. Please subscribe on whatever platform you listen to podcasts on the most. And I would love it so much if you leave a review and tell people what you think of us. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at The Living Relationship to connect more closely. And I'm grateful to be supporting you on your journey to love.